Good morning.
Good morning.
It's good to see everybody here. So this morning I'm going to talk about the Bodhisattva precept of not being possessive of anything. That's kind of the short version of the precept. So, I thought I'd start out by telling you kind of a funny story about that. Because I was curious about thinking about, well, what does it mean to say not be possessive of anything, right? So I was giving a lecture at San Francisco Zen Center one Saturday morning, and I can't remember exactly the context of this. Yeah, you remember the story. I can't remember the context of this, but I had taken as a kind of prop to this lecture. You remember those fish, those rubber fish that were on boards, and they were motion censored, and they with battery, they go, "Take me to the river, take me to the river." You remember those? Well, I had taken one of those fish to this lecture, and I'm not sure. I can't remember now what the point of it was, but everybody found it quite amusing. But at some point in the lecture, I talked about, you know, not being possessive of anything at some point in there. And so somebody raised their hand and they said, "Well, can I have the fish?" What are you going to do? So I handed over the fish. I got home and Jackie said, "Where's the fish?" So we went and bought another fish. Idea what happened to the second fish, nor do I know what happened to the first fish, because they did not give it back to me after the lecture. Anyway, there's a funny example of, you know, not being possessive of anything. I was thinking, well, of course we all possess things, right? We all own stuff. So what does it mean to say it's the point of this precept is not that you never own anything? Because we all have stuff. We have clothes, we have chairs, we have houses, we have all sorts of things, cars, etc. So then I think maybe the question is more like, do not be possessive of anything when it's not appropriate to be possessive of anything. So there's this little caveat in there, which is true of almost all the precepts. So, you know, let's talk about what that means to say something appropriate. What is the context of that? How do we discern, you know, what that means? Clearly in the lecture, I was kind of in a box, right? Mm-hmm. It would have been pretty weird if I had said, sitting up there as a teacher saying, "Don't be possessive of anything, but this is my fish, you can't have it." And also it wasn't a big deal to hand over the fish. So another way to talk about this precept, another version of it, is a bodhisattva is not possessive of spiritual or material aid, but shares understanding giving freely of self. So that's a little more narrow definition of this. Okay, so what is it when we say to be withholding? Because that's what we're talking about here. When we say don't be possessive, we're talking about don't withhold things. I think maybe that's closer to the spirit of this bodhisattva vow. And Reb Anderson wrote a really interesting book on the precepts. And in that he said, withholding is a kind of tightness or constriction of the heart. So I thought that was really kind of a wonderful definition of this, a constriction of the heart, this way in which we close up, we go into ourselves, we feel somehow that we need to set boundaries in a certain way to protect the self. So how do we know, you know, what's helpful and what's not helpful? I was thinking about, right before I came in, before we went to Zazen this morning, I was thinking about China, North Korea, and that whole situation, Japan, South Korea, all of that in the United States, everybody else who's involved. I was thinking, you know, countries are an awful lot like people, which makes sense because, of course, countries are people. They're not aliens that drop down from outer space. And actually, in that sense, here we have a situation that's about withholding. How to solve this problem, my understanding of this is that, say, for example, the Chinese, they're withholding in the sense that they don't want, they want North Korea to be there because it's more amenable to them in relationship to their understanding of their borders. So here we're talking about boundaries of self, the way we view the self of having these boundaries between us and the other. So for China, their boundary is, we want North Korea to be there because that seems more amenable to our notion of what protects us, what makes us feel safe. But actually, by doing that, it creates a problem because it's not helpful for the totality of the situation. It's not helpful for what's going on. What would be more helpful would to be to examine that, discern that, and let go of that in a way that worked. Right? So what we're being asked in this precept is to look at where we set boundaries that are not helpful, to look at and discern what the needs are of the totality of the situation, and then to let go when it's appropriate, to let go, to not be possessive. So we're not, this precept is not really talking about things. There might be a time when we're talking about things, but often it's something that's deeper than just about holding on to your possessions. Because it's really hard to let go of our perceived boundaries of self, which is what we're talking about here. We want to orient our minds, orient our hearts to being inclusive. So, for example, right now, every one of us in this room is a separate human being, right? We all have a sense of separateness, where we start and where we end. But how often do we think about this as we're also one entity? All of us in this room are one entity. If you came into the room and you didn't realize that human beings were supposed to be separate events, and you didn't realize that, for example, this book was a separate event, you would come in and you would just see the totality of this happening here in this room. We would all be one thing. We would not be separate from each other. When my understanding is when the Spanish went into South America, they were riding horses, and the natives didn't understand that horses, they thought the horses and the people were the same thing. They didn't understand that they were separate because the Spanish never got off their horses. So they thought they were one thing, which is a completely understandable mistake, right, to make about that. But from a Buddhist point of view, we're not separate things. So each one of us in this place, we're sharing something and we are the same thing. And yet at the same time, we're separate. So if I go to the supermarket and I'm standing in line and I'm getting impatient because I'm holding on to the notion that the world should revolve around me, right? I'm holding on to the notion that the checker's too slow or the person ahead of me is having way too many fun dialogues with that person. You know, I'm just getting caught in all of this stuff about how I want the world to be with a notion about how it's going to make me happier. I'm going to be so much happier if everybody just did what I wanted them to do. And then I get up to the clerk and I look at the clerk and I realize, wow, you know, from her body language, she looks like somebody who might be in chronic pain. You know? And I get up there and the guy who's bagging, he says, oh, how are you today? Are you having a nice day? And she's saying to me, you know, how are you? Did you find everything you wanted? But when I actually look at her and see this person, I see this person who is really working hard to embody what it is to be a good checker. In the midst of what I just feel intuitively is probably a difficult day for her. She's, you know, 70 years old. She's probably would not be, she looked about to be in her 70s. It's probably not her first choice to be working full time, standing up, checking at the Save Mart. And yet there she is. She's saying, how are you? Let me embody what I think is really being good at my job. Let me pay attention to my job the best that I can. And as soon as I realized that, I thought, what are you being possessive of? As soon as I actually realized that she and I were occupying the same time together, that we were not different, that I understood something about the nature of her life just by actually looking at who she was. And my heart opened. You know, I thought, how can I be possessive of my own notions of what makes me comfortable at this moment? Like, really, what makes me comfortable is having this experience of this shared relationship that we have with each other. What really makes me happy and helps alleviate my suffering is not getting caught in the suffering of having it my own way, being possessive of my own notions and ideas about how things should be, but actually opening that up and letting go of it. Feeling the humanity of the situation. Just looking at that person and including that person and realizing that when I look at people and actually presence myself for that person and understand that we are sharing the same time, we are sharing the same being with each other, then suddenly the whole dynamic shifts. So I'm no longer possessive of my notion of how things should be, only from, as the Tibetans like to say, my own side, only from my own point of view. So this is a very, I think, a real everyday experience of letting go of the self that we can have as soon as negative emotions arise, as soon as we feel impatient or angry or whatever it is that your particular affliction might be, right? Whatever it is that we feel, maybe we feel jealous, maybe we feel greedy, all of those kinds of kleshas, all those kinds of emotions that come up, if we actually can look and include the rest of our situation, include the rest of what is presencing with us, then that dynamic might change. That dynamic might become more generous and open and supportive of not just the other person, but ourselves as well. So experiencing this connection with each other, not being possessive of our own little bubble, right, that we live in. This is like the left hand withholding something from the right hand. Sorry, you can't have it. No, I want it. No, you can't have it. No, 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 please, it's mine. So this way in which we really go, oh, I have these two hands working together. I am in this situation. We are like this. You remember that, you know, and all the people in the church? Here's the steeple. So it's really like that, the right and the left hand working together. So we're really not a lot of separate entities kind of bouncing around off of each other. We are really sharing the simultaneity of this together. If we really look at each other, we can say, I know what that feels like. If I put that expression on my face that other person's having, I would know what that felt like. So we have this close kinship. We are not separate in this way. And this is, from a Buddhist point of view, this is where we start to alleviate our suffering. So to not be possessive is a lot about, it's not just about material things. Often when we, another part of this, talking about this is, and I talked about this last week, right, Houston. How we didn't see this so much in Irma, and I think it's just because of the situation that happened with everybody evacuating. But in Houston, you know, we really saw that about how people helped each other during the hurricane. And last night I saw something on the news. A woman was saying, she said, instead of just saying, what can I do to help you, to someone, looking at what you have to offer and then doing it. So here's the example she gave. Did anybody else see this on the news last night? Yeah. So she was talking about how there was a woman who said, what do I have to offer? I'm going to go outside my house and go down the street, and everybody who tries to drive into the water, I'm going to say, no, you shouldn't drive in there because it's too deep for your car, because she'd seen people getting trapped in their cars. So that's what she did. She went down the street. Or the three guys who had a fishing boat, and they got it out of storage, and they were, you know, cruising around picking people up, functioning as a taxi. So because they said, this is what we have to offer, this is what we can do, we're going to go out and we're going to be like a little taxi for people and taxi them around. And I thought about that, and I thought, how often is it that we say to ourselves, well, I'm not good enough, I ought to be, you know, in Africa working as an aid worker, or I should be something like that. We don't think about our own lives and what we can do in our own lives right now that is helpful to other people. We don't value what it is that we have to offer. It's really great that we all have different things to offer, because if we were all offering the same thing, that would be a very crowded space. So the fact that we all have this diversity of skill sets that we can use to support each other, to not be possessive of those. And part of that not being possessive of is to recognize that who we are is great, that we all have these particular things that we can do. So it's really helpful to go out at the end of the street and say to people, no, 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 don't drive into the water. And these other guys saying, okay, I'm going to go out. It's really helpful for you to say, this is the thing that I do. I really love to go around and help my neighbors with their gardening. That's what I like to do. I enjoy doing that. It's really helpful to the other person. I don't have to go to another country and save the world in some kind of abstract way. So this is this kind of generosity that we can all have. It's not a problem that we enjoy doing it. It's not a problem that it's something simple. It's not a problem. And we can offer that to each other when we're driving. I talk about this kind of thing a lot, but when we drive our cars, we go to the supermarket, all those little things that come up for us, that's where we cultivate not being possessive. That's where we cultivate no self, not in some abstract way. You know, what is it that really bugs you when you're out driving your car? To discern that, look at that, ask yourself what that's about, and say, how can I be more generous with myself, acknowledging that I'm a human being, I get annoyed, I'm impatient, I get sad, or whatever it is that happens for you. To acknowledge that and say, and I can do this. I can work on this thing, I can do this thing. I can do this practice of no self. I can realize that if somebody's pulling in front of me, that maybe I don't do that particular thing, but I do something else. This shared humanity that we have with each other, that we're sharing the same space and time, and that we want to support each other as best we can, and acknowledging that we're human beings. We're just human beings trying to get through our day, and we're not perfect. I think this notion of perfection is really interesting. So we come up with this is a kind being, you know, being about perfection, to assume that there's something called perfect in the abstract. In a way, it's very selfish, because when we talk about, if we say something's perfect, it's a notion that we have about what's perfect. It's kind of setting up our own standard of what's perfect. Because actually nothing's perfect. And the definition in Buddhism of perfection has also to do with the fact that nothing's perfect. We say samsara and nirvana are the same thing. They're not different. That's something to ponder. Nirvana is supposed to be some kind of a special state. If I ask you what nirvana is, maybe nirvana for you is the same thing as enlightenment. Well, it's where nothing bad happens. I always do the right thing. And the reason I always do the right thing is because it makes me feel better to know that I'm not going to get in trouble for having done the wrong thing. So it's this way in which we never suffer, but it doesn't work that way. I think our suffering is transformed by actually going into our suffering, experiencing our suffering, being willing to be present for our suffering, willing to be present for our possessiveness, the fact that we want to hold on to stuff, being present for the fact the other guy's suffering from the same thing, and feeling compassion and kindness towards ourselves and others. And then saying, okay, well, how can we go from here? When we say to ourselves, I'm this bad person, bad person, bad person, some other part of us says, I don't like that. I'm not going along with that story. I feel really defensive. Now I'm going to go on and just do whatever I want to do. It's kind of like, you know, just get upset. Nobody likes to be criticized, so we shouldn't criticize ourselves. Just say, yeah, okay, how can I just be present for this? How can I open up to this just as it is and accept the fact that, you know, when I'm in the supermarket line, the example I just gave you, I have to accept the fact that I get impatient in the supermarket line. I get, you know, I'm sorry to tell you this. Sorry, my flaw. So if you're driving behind me sometime, you might like go, oh my goodness, that must be Shinju up there. It's good for me because I think, oh my goodness, this is a small town. You better behave yourself. You better practice, girl. So there's this way that we have to forgive ourselves in order to be able to wake up to what's actually happening. So there's no purity here. And if we think there's some kind of purity of possessiveness, so if we look at it, say, the one of the problems with this precept, if you say, do not be possessive of anything, it often kicks in our pure mind. Oh, I got to give away my possessions. I'm going to walk around in a sackcloth, you know. But really what we're being asked to do is to discern what's most helpful in the situation. And if it's helpful for us to let go of our agenda, we let go of our agenda. That's the hard stuff to do. It's not about, you know, I'm only going to wear blue clothes for the rest of my life. Then you go out and you have a marvelous wardrobe of blue clothes. So those kinds of things, this notion of purity becomes very rigid. This kind of very rigid idea about what's right and wrong. But what's right and wrong really has to do with what's the most helpful thing to do here? What is going to be the most appropriate response, the most helpful response to what's happening? So there can't be any pure, in that way, non-possessiveness. The other thing is when we're feeling withholding about things, we want to hold on to stuff, we think it's going to make us happier. So if you have a really rigid idea about what somebody else is doing and you feel really critical towards them, you think that's going to make you happier if you're really critical. Somehow the fact that they get punished or that you withhold from them because in some way I think it makes us feel better about ourselves. Somehow we feel better because we're right and that other person is wrong. That's a kind of withholding. I think whenever those feelings come up for us, and this is this thing that Reb talks about, this kind of tightness or constriction of the heart. And when we feel that tightness, that judgmentalness, that constriction of the heart, at that point I think we have to ask ourselves, just stop at that point and ask ourselves, what's really happening here? What's going on here? Is it really important in the way that I'm viewing this thing? Our emotions will tell us a lot about what's going on. Our emotions and responding to them in the sense of looking at what's going on will tell us a lot about when we need to stop and pay attention. To ask ourselves, what's really going on here? What's really going on? What am I doing? What am I holding on to? What's the most helpful thing to do in this situation? And to look at that and realize that we're not gaining anything. We think that it's a validation of the self to be judgmental, but actually it's not helpful. When we're judgmental and we think we're right, that tells us, we are telling ourselves that we are better than, or that somehow it solidifies our sense of self, it validates our sense of self. I'm saying this because you went like that, so let me clarify. This kind of rigidity that we have, that's a kind of possessiveness. It's a holding on to these tight feelings. It's like getting caught and saying, I'm okay. And sometimes we do that because we just feel so threatened that we have to do that. And that's that we're human beings. Right? So when we're like this, we hope that people around us can see that and support us and say, oh, what does this person need right now? How can I help this person and let go of my own aversion maybe to this and be helpful? And then when we see somebody else experiencing that and we're having a pretty good day, we say, how can I be helpful? So it's a kind of reciprocity. We can give this to each other. We can see our suffering. And so we can help each other in the midst of our suffering just by a kind of kind gentleness with each other. It's not about going up and saying, well, you should do this or whatever it is. It's just this way of being present in a very kind way to actually see what's happening. Dogen's teacher, Ru Jing, said, from the very beginning, nothing has been withheld. From the very beginning, nothing has been withheld. This means that the whole world supports us. We couldn't breathe without the whole world. We couldn't eat without the whole world. We wouldn't be born without the whole world. Death is part of that support. And yet, it requires of us a leap of faith to believe that. It requires of us stepping off the 100-foot pole. It requires of us that we understand our world somehow as something much bigger than we are, much bigger than what we're holding on to, and that we have a kind of faith in the efficaciousness of this world, in the generosity of this world. And that's hard to do. That's hard to do. To ground ourselves in this world, to ground ourselves in our struggles, in the things that we do that are workable and helpful, in our celebrations, and to realize that we are not separate. And realizing that we're not separate is this way, I think, that we cultivate not being possessive. That there's enough to go around, that we can pass this all around to each other, and that it's enough, that nothing is being withheld. There's a way in which withholding, in some sense, is I want it to be this way. I want it to be this way. And if it's not this way, I can't see it. If it's not this way, it's hidden to me. So that's something to think about. Something to think about in our lives when we're feeling beleaguered in a certain way because we want it to be this way, not that way. And yet, the teaching is that nothing is withheld. The teaching is that nothing is hidden. So that's a very interesting koan. I think I'm going to stop there. I don't think I'm going to stop. I am going to stop there. Thank you very much.